Welcome to Leisureman Sunday Night Radio Show Podcast. I'm Paul Papps. He's Andrew Perloff. Perloff, what's on deck tonight?
Oh, we're going to talk a little World Cup. We're going to look back at last week's NBA draft and look ahead to next week's NBA free agency.
And we have something coming up later, the Leisureman movie segment. We are going to look back at an all-time great comedy. I'm not going to give it an A+. I think I'm going to give it like an A-, and I'm worried that you may lash out at me verbally.
Oh, man. I can't wait to find out what this is, Paul.
I think you're going to be actually real mad at me, not radio mad, but really mad at me.
That's the kind of thing that would make me angry at you. I'll hold a grudge if you were, but you and I are usually pretty close on movies, so now I'm very curious to see where we're going to differ.
Stick around and find out later, the Leisureman Podcast. You know, the good thing about the World Cup and the bad thing is it's morning and afternoons, which is usually the time you're like running errands, doing things, going to the beach, whatever. You got to kind of plan your day to watch the World Cup. There's no night matches.
Yeah, I like it on the weekend, though. It's similar to the Premier League. It's on Saturday and Sunday morning.
Right.
So I'm totally down with that because on Saturday night, I don't really want a game, but I do wish there was a primetime game during the week, especially there's nothing except baseball going on. So I'm a little bummed during the week, and I found myself watching replays of matches that I watched in the afternoon, which is kind of cool, actually.
It's great in the mornings. We work on the Dan Patrick Show well, and we get in, and all of a sudden, 8:05, here comes Sweden running out of the onto the pitch. It's great.
Let me give you my my World Cup questions, Paul. You ready?
Go ahead. Yep.
Okay. So far, if you had to reseed the whole tournament and you were doing a pool, who would your number one seed be?
That's a toughie. Teams that have played well but are not my number one seed include Croatia. Mm-hmm. Brazil has been good, but not Brazil-ish yet. Mexico has been over their skis, but they don't have the talent to be a one seed. England has played very well. Same, they do have the talent. It's a little young. Belgium has a truckload of talent. They've won two matches. Their goal differential is +6. Belgium usually finds a way to hit the banana peel at some point. Germany lost to Mexico, so by that doesn't take them out of the one seed prediction. I'm going to go with France, always deep. Not as many household names on the French team this time as in past years. But I would say if I were just taking if there was an open draft, I think I would take France. I think they haven't played their best, but they have a lot of tradition there, and they usually don't screw it up, if you know what I mean. Don't choke.
How much should I read into the early results? Do teams tend to get hot in these early rounds and then carry into the final 16? Or is it a reset? Say Brazil doesn't play great now. Will they turn it on once they get to the elimination round?
Yeah, that's a good question because I think obviously the second tier teams like Peru and Iceland and Costa Rica are battling to get into the next stage, the knockout round. And a team like Brazil, they started slow the other day, real slow.
Yeah.
But the level of talent with Costa Rica and Brazil, it's not even in the vicinity. There's not one, maybe one guy in Costa Rica could start for Brazil. So I think some of these teams, though, get caught pacing themselves early. The powerhouses, like Germany, should mop up Mexico. Mexico is good. Germany's great. But Mexico had one of the biggest wins in their country's history by beating Germany to open up their World Cup run.
Yeah, and then I think yesterday Germany scored a second-half goal to keep their whole thing alive
against
Sweden. So England, is it time for me to finally get excited for my buddy the Men in Blazers and Team England, who I have in the Dan Patrick Show pool?
I would buy your Harry Kane jersey. Now, prepare yourself if anyone out there is an England football fan, England soccer fan. They've been close before, and the rug usually gets pulled out. Google David Beckham World Cup, and you'll find some good and some bad. But England is red hot right now. Their fans are as fired up as they've been in probably 15 years.
My wife informed me that the English soccer team was very attractive this morning, Paul. What am I supposed to do with that?
Hey, as always, Andrew, no matter if World Cup or no World Cup, do whatever your wife says.
I'm Perloff. He's Paps. Talking a little NBA draft. We're a few days past it. Trying to figure out really what we saw because there's so many young players and there's so many sort of teams are tanking all the time. We don't really know what we have there. But there's one theory that Paul and I have that I think we're going to stick with. In general, we talked about this earlier, avoid the hometown kid. So Philadelphia 76ers.
Basically, the theory is don't let the hometown factor into your drafting at all. Now, the Phoenix Suns took DeAndre Ayton, who's semi-local. He plays in Tucson, not Phoenix. And those are two separate places. Even though it's in Arizona, he didn't play at ASU. He played at University of Arizona. But a lot of people in the media said, what a perfect fit, DeAndre Ayton and the Suns. Man, I mean, if if they drafted Jaren Jackson Jr., he would have become a Phoenix resident in about 4 hours after he was drafted. Yeah. It doesn't matter at all. But then you go back to history, Perloff. Here's some of the bad ones. I'll go a good one. I guess it's a good one. 2008, number one pick of the draft, Derrick Rose, taken by the Chicago Bulls. He played high school on the South Side. Went to Memphis 1 year. And for the first 4 years, 5 years of his career, Derrick Rose was legit. First 4 years, I mean, he was a superstar. So that worked out. But did it work out?
No, it certainly didn't work out.
But other than injuries?
Yeah, nah, he had some off-the-court problems. Also, his game was very ball-dominant, not three-point. I'm not sure he would have really lasted into the Golden State era. He was sort of the last of a generation of put your head down and drive to the hole point guards, in my opinion.
I was
not a huge Derrick Rose guy. I got to be totally honest. I thought he was a little overrated.
That is scalding hot. Wow, that's nice by you. 2003, number one pick, LeBron James. There's no reason to, you know, You would take him if he was from a country you didn't even like. Then you go back to Michael Olowokandi, 1998, went to the LA Clippers. Did he play at like Santa Clara or something like that?
Pacific, but he's not a home guy. He's from England.
Right, but he was playing at the local college. Like everyone fell in love with this guy at this little school outside of Los Angeles, and I think that the Clippers fell for him because of the localness.
Well, wait. Let's go back here. Is local from college or is local from high school? Because Marvin Bagley's the local Phoenix kid. He's from Phoenix.
It could be either.
That drafting a local kid? Yeah,
no.
But Mikal Bridges from Villanova, who the 76ers originally drafted, he was a double winner.
That's a double local. Like Marvin Bagley III is a high school local for the Phoenix Suns. That's not enough if you're a college, because nobody really knows where people went to high school anymore. But then, okay, let's look at, here's a good example. Eddie Curry played down in my neighborhood, Thornwood High School on the south side of Chicago. And he was supposed to be this super post player, big as a house. And then I remember reading an article in the Chicago Sun-Times, like, you know, should the Bulls draft Eddie Curry? He had 0 points the other night and 5 rebounds in a high school game. He got shut out by the opposing center. And I remember seeing these articles in the Chicago Tribune saying, don't take him. And the Bulls had, I think, 2 top 6 picks. They took Tyson Chandler, who slowly ended up with a really nice career. And then Eddie Curry, who I think he averaged 18 points a game 1 year with the Knicks, but that doesn't count. And he was a bust.
Well, it's funny because I thought originally Eddie Curry was the better player than Tyson Chandler. Curry could score. He was a really good scorer.
Chandler was more of a defensive guy, and he never got great at offense. Like Eddie Curry started out, I think his fourth year with the Bulls at age 22, he was averaging 16 and 5. But this guy's 7'3" and couldn't average 8 rebounds a game. That's effort.
Did you see him in the McDonald's? He had one of the better McDonald's games I've ever seen, by the way. I thought Eddie Curry was the truth. I thought that was the best pick. But you're right. Of course he was a bust. Dude, he scored 19.5 points a game 1 year with the Knicks. How is that possible? Is this the right player that I'm looking up?
I know. He started 81 out of 82 games, played 35 minutes, averaged 19 and 7. And then all of a sudden he said, oh, I forgot I'm Eddie Curry, and went right back to averaging 13.2. And then he got injured. He averaged 1.7 2 years after averaging 19.5.
So it's funny about Tyson Chandler, too, because that was sort of Jerry Krause's new philosophy. I'm going to go young. It turned out he picked one really good sort of championship piece in Tyson Chandler, but you can't have all 18-year-olds. You know, that's the problem. You need to mix them in with veterans. That's what Phoenix is right now. If you looked at Phoenix's roster, they're all 19-year-olds. They have a bunch of Eddie Currys and Tyson Chandlers, and you can't do that in the NBA.
You really can't. It's exciting, and I think the local fans will like seeing all these 19-year-olds run around, and they're energetic. But there's not a good player in the bunch. Devin Booker's a really good offensive player. He's not a good player. That's a different thing. Here's a thing. We do the bust metric, the Leisureman bust metric, and we usually do it during the NFL draft. Using the NFR Leisureman bust metric, which is, you know, people are talking about in England, people are talking about in Europe, that we've mastered this metric here. Who is the top 10 draft pick, based on whatever reasoning you have, that's most likely to be a bust in the 2018 NBA draft?
Wow. Because... So the last, I was actually...
Should we run through them?
Yeah. The last 5 drafts, by the way, you have to realize 8 out of 10 of the top guys have been bust. The rule is bust. The exception is the guy who's not a bust. But usually people are taking centers and they bust.
Right. Some end up being serviceable NBA players that bounce around and get traded as they become trade bait and remember them. Oh, remember when he was a top 10 pick?
Yeah, but by the way, is D'Angelo Russell a bust? I just want to define bust. Like he scored 20 points a game last year for the Nets or something, but he's a bust, right? He was the number two pick for Lakers.
He is a bust because of what he didn't do for the team that drafted him. Now, he could salvage his career, though.
But I pulled that up for Victor Oladipo the other time. He was off the team that drafted him in 3 years, and everyone said, no, he's not a bust because he's a star now. So how do you – I'm not sure that there's a clear ruling here on what a bust is, Paulie.
And it's really tough with NBA players because they're all 18, 19, so you need 3 years to let it play out. Even Steph Curry, I think he averaged like 12, 14, you know, the first couple of years. He wasn't lighting it up yet, and he definitely wasn't a bust, but he wasn't himself yet. He didn't become Steph Curry till year four.
Yeah, let's run down this list and do our bust metric. All right, go ahead, Paul.
Let's start at the top. DeAndre Ayton, what would be a red flag for him?
He's a 7-foot center, and it's the year 2018. That is a giant, waving, gigantic red flag.
So you're saying it doesn't matter what he does as a player. The post game is irrelevant, so he's not worthy of the number one pick.
I was watching the Celtics-Sixers series. The Sixers came in as huge favorites, and Joel Embiid destroyed them in one game. Then I heard Brad Stevens after the game say, yeah, how many threes did he hit on us? And by the way, Embiid destroyed them, and the Celtics won by 20 points. And Brad Stevens is like, he's just not hurting us. He's just putting in a bunch of twos. Doesn't matter today's game. That's how I see Ayton.
Yeah, you know, I got to agree with you because, I mean, even if best case scenario, let's say DeAndre Ayton in 2 years from now is averaging 22 and 12 and three blocks. He's still not hitting any, unless he's hitting a bunch of threes for you and he ends up being a step outside guy like Kevin Garnett, or even Kevin Garnett, wasn't a 3-point guy. He was a more inside outside guy, and he would be less relevant in this NBA.
Yeah. Although I got to admit, like, the Ayton highlights are crazy. He does look like he could be the next Hakeem. So I'm a little less nervous about him. All right. Number two, who do you got?
Marvin Bagley, power forward out of Duke. Yeah. I would say the only thing there's nothing about his game that makes me think he's a bust. Mm-hmm. He plays a lot of hustle from what I saw his first year at Duke. Going to the Kings, you become irrelevant. You just become irrelevant really fast.
That's not even like a bust guideline. That's a bust rule. If the Kings take you, you're a bust. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. They have a lot of young, talented players.
It's almost like what happened to David Carr when he got drafted by the Texans. He's going to get roughed up playing for the Kings for 3 years, and then he'll probably just bounce around from team to team and play some good basketball and make a lot of money. And that's not against him. I'm not questioning his character. I'm just saying playing for the Kings in a town that doesn't get a lot of press coverage on a team that just sucks, it's got to wear on you.
Yeah, and he's one of five 7-footers. They got Scal Labrassiere from the Kentucky, who's also a lefty like Bagley. They have Willie Cauley-Stein, who's a 7-footer. They have Kostas Koufos from Ohio State, 7-footer, and they have Harry Giles from Duke, 7'2". I don't know what they're doing. They're collecting 7-footers in the era you don't need them.
Yeah, they're ready. If all of a sudden there's a time machine movie where we all go back to 1986, the Kings are ready to rock. All right, the Atlanta Hawks traded they took Luka Doncic. They traded him to Dallas. All right, Luka Doncic, guard, Slovenia, 19 years old. Everyone says he's one of the hotter European guys. Here's the bust metric on him. The overrating of European basketball players from year to year in the NBA draft is a tradition like none other. We always fall for some Dante Exum, Ricky Rubio, and this year it's Luka Doncic. And everyone's like, well, look at his highlights. Well, when are highlights ever bad? So it's not about him, and he could be a very nice player. He could average, you know, 2 years from now, he could be averaging 13 and 6. That's not a star, though.
Yeah, I mean, Mario Hezonja is the clear directly comparison to him. But then again, all the analysts said that he's better, more accomplished in the European game than all those guys. So we'll see. But it sure seems like our buddy Chris Mannix, let's face it, he just falls in love with overseas players. And I had trouble trusting them. So that's a big bust measure.
All right, I'm going to go next one. And I like this guy because Jaren Jackson Jr., power forward out of Michigan State, very young. I think he's still 18. He showed he could play inside, showed he could play outside. The biggest bust metric avoider is being the son of a former NBA player. Do you agree with that one? Oh,
no,
yes!
No, that's the best thing you can be. A mid-level NBA player is how you become a superstar.
What I'm saying is he takes away a lot of the bust worry because his dad played in the league.
Yes.
I have almost no worry that he's going to be a bust.
That's the greatest thing. I totally agree. I'm sorry. I totally agree with you. That's the best thing about him. And you need that mid-level player like Joe Bryan, Kobe Bryant's dad, Del Curry, guys like that. The mid-level player. So he grew up around professional players. Now, he does have the Grizzlies factor. Right now, the Grizzlies are pretty irrelevant.
But they've been relevant in the recent 3 years ago. The Grizzlies were pretty cool. They were kind of in this.
That team's gone. There's none of those guys left.
Right.
I mean,
they were the team that played low to the post. They were the last post team that had a little success in the NBA. But Jaren Jackson Jr., because his father was a good, not great NBA player, he gets well out of the bus zone. All right,
wait,
last.
But did you see Michigan State play at all this year? If you did, and you're telling me that he looked like the number four pick, did not see that.
Because he's all Poe. He's all potential.
All Poe. Yeah, exactly. We have to finish this up, Paul, because I'm just so fired up about how many busts there were in the first round of the NBA draft. And ESPN went the exact opposite direction. They basically said there were 30 All-Stars in the first round. So we went through the first four picks, and that brings us to number five, Trae Young, Atlanta Hawks. And this one's confusing to me because I'm not sure what the red flag is for Trae Young as an NBA player. Paul, what do you got?
I got it for you, and it's kind of deep. Trae Young is a beneficiary of the Steph Curry effect on the NBA. He is the first college player to say, I'm going to play just like Steph Curry plays, shoot from all over, jack as soon as I get across half court, shoot more and more and more and more from all different angles, runners, one-handers, all this stuff, and it got him to be the fifth pick in the draft. Now, there's one Steph Curry on earth, there's not a second, and the odds of there being a second are pretty low. So Trae Young may not be a bust, but he may have been drafted way too high for what his role could be in the NBA.
But if Steph Curry sort of redefined the game and pushed the game out beyond the three-point line, isn't that the kind of player you want? I mean, Steph Curry showed when you do that, you screw up the defense, and they basically have to cover too much of the court. Now, if he can do any of that, then Trae Young can shoot. We were just discussing this.
His percentage is iffy.
He's 5'6" and weighs 150 pounds, and he shot 50% from the field. That's not bad. He's okay. He's not a terrible. He's a really good shooter, and he was shooting from so far away, and he knew that everybody was on him. The entire defense was on him. He shoots like Curry. It's just a little awkward. Okay, and number six pick, Mo Bamba.
Oh, boy.
Give me the bust metric for him.
Well, tall, skinny guys who need to put on weight is a huge, huge red flag. You go back to guys like Hashim Thabeet and other big men who never put on that weight. Remember Darius Miles out of East St. Louis? And he was unbelievably athletic and just long and like, how does he do what he does? And if they never really put that weight on, and again, Mohamed Bamba, if he's going to be a true center in this league, as you said, it's not that important. Could he be like down the road Ben Wallace, where he dominates the game with defense and block shots? Maybe, but he's got to put on 30 pounds.
Well, it doesn't matter. Ben Wallace wouldn't fit in today's game. Even if he puts on weight, seven-footers, even if you're talented, it doesn't really matter. You're going to be a little bit irrelevant. Although everyone says that he was working with a shooting coach in the offseason, and he really worked on his shot.
I wonder if Mohamed Bamba could look at your boy for the New York Knicks, Porzingis, and say, you know what? Just because I'm tall, I'm not playing inside that much. Porzingis is not a banger. He gets enough rebounds and blocks enough shots, but he plays outside to in more than he plays inside to out. And if Mohamed Bamba just says, look, I know the lay of the land in the NBA, I'm going outside to in, and that's it. And it'd be the smartest move of his career, I think.
Yeah, I don't even see it matter. Or in Orlando. Orlando's got they're still so young, like Aaron Gordon and all those guys. Doesn't seem like an impactful guy to me. So I'm calling them all busts. I say you have six busts, and I am more likely to be right than ESPN. I'm just telling you, these guys are all.
You are more likely to be right.
Yeah. So, but I like the 10 to 20 guys. I like the next Donovan Mitchell. I mean, Donovan Mitchell led a team to the second round of the playoffs this year, scored 20 points a game. I like Jason Tatum, the 6'6", 6'8 guy. I mean, Mitchell's 6'3", but the strong two guard. That's where the NBA is, the perimeter player, Paul.
Okay, let's go from pick 15 through 30. Who's the guy who leads the 15 through 30 picks in scoring?
Oh, Lonnie Walker. San Antonio shares the ball, but Lonnie Walker's great. By the way, Jerome Robinson, the kid out of BC, he's great. I love Zaire Smith. Everyone says he might even go to the G League this year because he's so raw. I don't buy it. He's amazing. There's a lot of guys. There's this kid, Troy Brown Jr., who the Wizards took at 15. They're all these 6'5", 6'6", wings. That seems like the kind of player you just need to load your team up with them. So I'm excited about all of them. I don't know which ones will be good, but I don't know if there's another Donovan Mitchell, but I watched Paul. I literally spent maybe an hour watching Zaire Smith from the tournament. He had like four dunks in the last 2 minutes against Florida in a great tournament game last year, the Texas Tech guard. He is really, really good. These guys are all really good and really young and really raw. So the question is, you know, what do they project as?
All right, before we wrap it up, as always, how was your weekend, Pearl?
Oh, my weekend was awesome. Went to a huge party in Brooklyn. It was the most Brooklyn party I've ever been to. I mean, there were more filmmakers, journalists. everybody ran a film festival or did a documentary or was overseas directing some movie, or it was the craziest, like, sort of cultural New York City name dropper of all time. How about you, Paul?
Up at the log cabin up in Vermont, went to a charity golf tournament, but I didn't play because my game isn't really up to snuff to play in the charity golf tournament. Made a donation, drank a few cocktails, supported the cause, but I was like, I don't do well with crowds and my golf game. I don't mind if I go with a couple bros and a couple drinks. I could have a lot of fun golfing, but when there's more people watching, it's funny. I don't get nervous doing really anything else in front of crowds, but golf, you're really on a stage there.
It's the worst. The first tee kills me in golf. I feel like if I could go alone on an 18-hole course, I wouldn't be bad, but I am so mentally weak.
Paul Pabst, Andrew Perloff, we are the Leisureman. Perloff, a lot of fun this month. June's a really weird month because, the NBA Finals, once it ends, baseball is hot, but not too hot. Like August, it really heats up baseball because you're trying to get a wild card. The wild card is the most genius thing baseball ever did to extend the regular season. Side topic. But I think what's really interesting about the World Cup is it simmers for 4 years. It just simmers and simmers and simmers. And then all these teams, the one thing about the World Cup, more so than the action on the pitch, is the drama off the pitch. Like Argentina, Lionel Messi in his home stretch, in his prime, they looking for a great performance in the World Cup, and they are just you-know-what the bed, and it's just disarray. And then Germany loses to Mexico in round one, and all of a sudden Germany's on the hot seat, and Mexico is on fire. The World Cup is... it's got to be the least predictable sporting event on the planet, even though only the big guys usually win it.
Yeah, so is there any chance we'll see someone new this time around? Like a Belgium who seems red hot and really dangerous, maybe a Uruguay. Is there a chance that it's not going to be the usual suspects? Because I kind of, as a fan and a casual fan watching soccer, I'm kind of withholding judgment at this round. I'm waiting till the final 16. Because right now, Germany is challenged, but I feel like they'll be there. Brazil doesn't look great, but I feel like they're going to be there. So how much can I read into the early games?
I would compare it to this. It's like the NCAA tournament. There's lots of fun teams like George Mason and Northern Iowa and, UTEP and other teams that are really fun to watch the first 2 weeks of the tournament. And then usually the real teams are in the final four. There's sometimes a wild card. You'll have like a George Mason or you'll have a Butler. And that could happen, like a Belgium. Even though Belgium's really good, for them to make the Final Four would be a big accomplishment. But then you take a team like Croatia to get to the Final Four, or Australia or Iceland. That would be, now you're going next level. That's like a mid-major. But usually France, Italy, not this year for Italy, they're not even present. France, Germany, Brazil are the teams to bet on to come out of the whole thing.
Yeah, sure. I do. I really love in certain teams. I still watch. To me, Brazil feels like the highlight team. Germany was super efficient. Brazil, something about it, Paul, what am I seeing that just feels different when, again, like I don't know the game like you know the game at all. But when I watch Brazil, I feel like I'm watching the Golden State Warriors a little bit.
I think that's a good comparison.
Moving around a lot.
I think when you look at a team like Brazil or Spain, the way they pass the ball so fast, it makes the other teams look like they're playing a different sport. I guess you could compare it to the Warriors where, what do they have, 300 passes a game? There's no dribbles. Mm-hmm. Klay Thompson will have a game with 50 points and 10 dribbles. They can do things that other teams physically can't. And, if you look back at USA Soccer 20 years ago, USA Soccer didn't have a guy on their team. And, Landon Donovan at his best, Clint Dempsey at his best, couldn't crack the starting lineup probably. I'm almost sure of it. I'm not an expert, but for Brazil or for Spain. But we have usually one or two world-class talents on our team. They have like 13 or 14. There's guys on their bench that are world-class talents.
Yeah, it's not just the talent, though, too. It seems like they all know how to play together. Maybe that is talent. It's funny about the basketball analogy. The Spurs, remember, they came up and talked a lot about being influenced by soccer. Tony Parker was French. Manu was Argentinian. Tim Duncan grew up in the Virgin Islands. Now, of course, Kerr, who is a Popovich acolyte, brings some of that energy to Golden State. So I think the best basketball teams, the other team, like, and I feel like this is going to maybe be a huge stretch. I feel like the New England Patriots play that kind of team football. Does that make any... I feel like, I'm a big system guy. I just like watching units of play as a team where everybody seems to be moving. Like, if you watch the really, really good teams, a casual fan will focus on the ball, but you look at the guys all around, they're all cutting all the time. To me, that's like the key to any team sport. Is that way too much of a stretch, Paul?
I think I would compare a team like Spain or Brazil to... I guess to a timing team where you just can't keep up with them, a run-and-shoot offense that's really good, maybe the Rams at their best back in the day with Kurt Warner. But I think it's mostly the level of talent. Talent usually wins out in the World Cup because you got to get to so many rounds. It's kind of
how
like
is that? Wait. That's impossible. How could it be pure talent? It's got to be team. It's got to be coaching coming up in the system because some of these countries are just not big enough to have enough talent.
Right, but I guess it's like the Golden State Warriors have really good coaching, but they also have three of the best players on earth offensively to work with. So it's like a cycle. You get the best coaches as well because the most popular coaches around the world want to go to teams that actually have a chance. You don't want to coach Peru if you don't have to. So they have a lot more money to spend, the clubs, the national teams from Brazil, from Spain, and places like that.
Well,
I guess what? Real quick,
yeah.
By the way,
yeah.
I just got a great mid-show email. We usually don't check the Leisman inbox. Roger Bennett, half of Men in Blazers, just sent a note to me. Heading to Moscow this week. Let me know if you want to have me on the show. From our boy Roger Bennett, Men in Blazers.
Well, let's get Roger on because I'm on Team England right now.
He's thinking of us.
Yeah, although it is a little bit of an issue with my wife. I mean, I do not like this.
Explain this.
So we're hanging out, watching some World Cup this morning.
No big
deal. She goes, man, that English team, they are really attractive. And then she mentioned Harry Kane.
Is that a direct quote, attractive?
Yeah, attractive. It wasn't just like, the word was attractive. I don't know what to do with that word. And then she mentioned Harry Kane specifically, which I'm fine with that. I'm not going to compete with Harry Kane. I don't think many people can compete with Harry Kane. Yeah, he's no Cristiano Ronaldo.
No.
But he's pretty much top of the mountain. I actually said to her, I'm like, it's not just England. Every team in the World Cup has incredibly good-looking players. Like, the average soccer player has a $600 haircut, Paul. I don't know what is going on. They're like male models running around who happen to be playing soccer.
Yeah, if you're not a fan of England or Harry Kane, Harry Kane looks like the actor Josh Lucas on the cover of GQ. But like you know how they get him primped up for the cover of GQ, Josh Lucas? Imagine Harry Kane looks like that all the time, even when he's sweating.
Yeah, like not Josh Lucas' Sweet Home Alabama, where he's kind of grungy with Reese Witherspoon. He's got the hair up. It's something about, it's not that they're necessarily better looking people. They're just in amazing shape, and they have this confidence about them. It's not just England team. It's all of them, too. By the way, I've started to get some favorite players in this tournament, although not all of them are doing well. I become, and I know they lost, a huge Mo Salah fan. Tell me about Mo Salah. Like, I know Egypt is out of it, and like they were heartbreaking, but he is such a cool dude, too.
It's weird because I saw a story. Mo Salah is considering quitting the Egypt team going forward. You know, Egypt was very hot as a team to pick for the World Cup because Mohamed Salah, he's from Egypt. He was on Liverpool this year and just exploded. He was a good player who exploded to become a great player. And he was the best player in the Premier League in England and for Liverpool, who had a really great season. And he's very likable. He came out of nowhere. It's weird because most players don't explode mid-career at age 26. They usually explode at like 19, 20, 21, 22. So he's a really cool, likable player. But Egypt just didn't put forth the effort. Salah had a shoulder injury. He suffered in the Champions League, so he wasn't able to play full tilt. But what happens a lot with these matches is these star players, once they get the worldwide blame of their team not advancing, they go, all right, it's time to retire from international play. Like, Zlatan Ibrahimovic should still be on his Switzerland World Cup team. You know, he should be on the international team. Even though he's old and he's playing the MLS now, he's still talented. It goes that way. Like, go back to, 8 years ago. We talked about this a million times. Landon Donovan was old for soccer, but he's still probably the top two or three players we had. But a lot of times when these European soccer players, I should say international soccer players, catch heat from an early exit in the World Cup, they tap out.
Yep. Oh, totally. The other guy who really has always stood out to me and everybody else, too, I saw this headline today. Cristiano Ronaldo, not Messi, is the closest thing to Diego Maradona we've seen in the World Cup. And just as a non-expert fan, I kind of see that. It's just magnetic when he's on the field. It's unbelievable how everything revolves around his foot.
I'd say the difference between Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo is that Cristiano Ronaldo has some pretty good players around him, and he could play outside and feed other people and doesn't have to have the ball at all times. The entire Argentinian game plan, and when Lionel Messi is playing on his club team, is find a way to get him the ball kind of almost in the low post. He is like he plays close to the goal, kind of in the middle, and they just find a way to get him because he's short and stocky and strong, and they know if he can get the ball within 20 meters of the goal, he's the toughest guy in the world to deal with. Over the past decade, he has been. I feel a little bad for him because a lot of people on the worldwide stage are going to, you know, blame him and say, wow, what he's kind of had a no-show career in the World Cup, him and his team, not in that order, his team and him. And it's going to sully his reputation as probably a top three soccer player ever to walk the earth. I would say that's a fair estimate.
Who are the, like the Pele level, you mean?
I, I'm not the expert who could talk about every player in history and go back to the 50s, but I think most people would say that Pele at his peak, and there was a time when Lionel Messi was truly unstoppable, and he would score three or four or five goals in a match sometimes. Yeah. I remember I was down in Jamaica, and I was with some friends, and we were watching Messi play, and this is 4 or 5 years ago when he was at his true peak, and we were watching a game, and it looked like he was toying with other people. And he was just so much better than everyone else. And the other players on the pitch that day were some of the highest paid, highest reputation players on earth. They were in the Spanish league. And he was making them look silly. And Ronaldo, you know, he has the flash, but I'd never think he was as unstoppable as Messi at his best.
Yeah, I feel like just eyeballing. Of course, Ronaldo is just so dominant. He's so fast, and he's so much more pretty to watch than Messi. So I'll take your word for it, but right now, obviously, I'm not seeing it in this tournament. So, yeah, so that, man, we just chopped up some World Cup there, Paul.
That was fun. Do you want to order some Harry Kane jerseys and just walk around me and you with Harry Kane jerseys in Brooklyn?
No.
This come on. Too much. That wouldn't look weird at all.
No, not with my wife declaring that she's on Team England. I'm over them. In fact, I'm not even going to root for them anymore. I'm hoping for them to get eliminated quickly, although that's obviously not going to happen.
You got to search out a really unattractive team to root for. No names. We're not going to give any names. that's a problem. There's no good, poor-looking teams. Leisureman, NBC Sports Radio.
Now, if you want to know where LeBron James is headed, then you have to stay with the Leisureman tonight because Paul and
we
I
know the answer.
People know. Yeah, oh, we totally know. Or you can give us a call if you happen to know, 855-323-4NBC. A lot of people ask me this weekend, Paul. I'd say six. A guy at the bagel store.
Bagel store guy.
Two or three guys at the basketball court. Do you know where LeBron is going? And I decided to take another tack than usual. I say, yes, I know exactly where he's going, but I'm not telling you.
Oh, really? You don't even engage? Because I got the question twice at the golf course yesterday. Hey, what are you guys hearing? He asked me what I'm hearing as if I have sources inside LeBron's camp. I'm air quoting.
Yeah. Well, Rich Paul texted me the other day and said, hey, I was just looking at apartments in Studio City, LA. Of course we don't know. The funny thing is, we look back the last time when he left Miami for Cleveland, nobody, even the people inside SI, except for like three people, knew that he was going to jump back to Cleveland.
Okay, so let me ask you something. When he left the Cavaliers, I don't know how many years ago, 8 years ago, to go to Miami, do you remember where you thought he was going? And not just because the Boys and Girls Club was only an hour outside of New York City. I remember I thought he was going to the Knicks because it would be gigantic. And I think it's my own belief that if I'm a guy like him, I want to see how high I could hit or how far of a home run I could hit. I go back to Curt Schilling going from the Diamondbacks to the Boston Red Sox and winning a title there. That was so unexpected because the Red Sox had never won. And I thought LeBron was going to the Knicks because that was the biggest stage in sports. And the Lakers had no use for him because they still had a great Kobe at the time. Do you remember what you thought back then?
Gosh, you know what's funny? I have no idea what I thought. I kind of thought the Knicks seemed unlikely because of Charles Dolan. Because I'm in New York a lot and everyone hates the Knicks because of the owner. I don't remember. I really don't remember. I do remember in the middle of the day, Stephen A. said Miami was the front runner.
Right.
But I don't, honestly, like, what were the, do you remember what the Vegas odds were? Was Miami in the, they were definitely in the top three. Was it Miami, Cleveland, and New York? Were that the last three? Do you remember? I remember Cleveland was in there, Miami was in there, and the Knicks were in there. Was it that the last three teams we came down to?
That's what I remember.
The Nets were fourth, too. The Nets were also in the picture.
Was that because of Jay-Z and they were moving to Brooklyn?
No, just to get to New York, I think. And also, they were loaded with talent back then. They had Paul Pierce and some other guys. So, yeah, I don't remember that. But I will tell you, Paul, I think I was not in the camp that killed LeBron for the decision. And I think now that it's 8 years later, we all realized we were a little too harsh on him for that. Did you agree with that statement?
Well, yeah, because we've talked about this so many times before. I'm getting a headache just thinking about it.
Yeah.
The only thing that it didn't bother me at all. I was like, he did it at a Boys and Girls Club. I mean, that's what better thing can you do there? To take it to a Boys and Girls Club? I'm sure there was some type of huge charity cash went to the Boys and Girls Club of America or to the New York area, the suburbs. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, Jim Gray, he seemed to do a fine job. I say, I'm taking my talents to, unless you're some old stuffy dude who just hates young athletes because they're rich and famous and better than you and everything, nothing he did was wrong. It's how we took it.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, it's funny. So the next time he did Sports Illustrated, I've heard a rumor that he's definitely going to do it through his own media property, The Uninterrupted, this
yes.
time, since he basically, all the superstars are starting to get their own websites. So I think that's how he does it this time. How do you think he announces?
I think it's he's going to control it, and I think it'll be off his social media. And he'll announce it with a long, drawn-out statement with the reasoning. He'll answer all the questions that you'd possibly have in four or five paragraphs, why he's doing it, family, basketball, lifestyle, all that stuff. And then he'll say, now there's no interviews. I'm not doing any interviews. I'll see you at training camp.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is if he goes back to Cleveland, which I think has to be the – isn't that the front runner? Well, the Lakers and Cleveland are the one and two, right? But it seems like the Lakers, all that super team and Lakers stuff was falling apart. It seems like Paul George might want to stay in OKC. Carmelo re-signed there. All the indications are that Paul George actually likes Oklahoma City. Kawhi is not going to the Lakers because the Spurs won't talk to the Lakers. So is it really possible that LeBron will go with a bunch of youngsters and not really be competitive? Is that possible that he doesn't care if he can't win a championship this year?
It's I can't imagine that. I can't imagine that the lifestyle of the town would take precedent over the structure of the team I put together. But maybe he thinks that as long as I'm still in shape, I could put together a team that could battle with anybody after you look at that. And going to L.A., you start moving some pieces around. You say, we'll dangle Brandon Ingram. We'll dump Lonzo Ball. And next thing you know, you got four new guys who have the entire summer to play there. He played with six starting lineups this year. But he had two full waves of players come at him this year, and he went through both of them and ended up in the NBA Finals.
Well, coming out of the East. But there's not a lot you can move. There's not a lot of guys that are going to be loosened out there. You know, the core, if he went to the Lakers now and they did not get Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, they'd have Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram. You know, that's going to be a really, really young team around him. I'm not saying they're not good players, but in the West, do you honestly see them getting to the conference finals?
No, you're going to need a break. You're going to need a break. You're going to need a rolled ankle by someone in Golden State. I'm going to go back to July 8th of 2010. I'm looking at articles that day, and give Chris Broussard credit. He was an ESPN senior writer. He's, quote, all indications are that LeBron James is leaning towards signing with the Miami Heat on Tuesday night, according to several sources with knowledge of the situation. Barring a late change of heart, sources say James has decided to join Wade, Bosch, et cetera, et cetera. He'll make his decision. It's called the decision on ESPN. It was a made-for-TV event, and ESPN produced it. And that was maybe, if you say LeBron made a mistake, was giving up control in that way. Maybe he didn't give up control, but he gave up perception control. But, you know, that's the only two reports I can find that someone had it before he signed with Miami.
Yeah, and I remember Stephen A. was in that mix too.
Sure.
So, yeah, so we have a week basically by next week at this time will be the eve of when NBA players can start talking. It should happen pretty fast. Now, I think two summers ago, Kevin Durant signed on July 4th with the Warriors, so he had 3 days of meetings. You know, isn't it amazing? Like, basically, in 2 weeks, we could be on the Leisurman, and LeBron will be in a new uniform, and it's all over. It's all going to be done.
Oh, man, that's going to be fun. The Leisurman, Paul Pabst, Andrew Perloff. Paul, we got a lot coming up here. We're going to do the movie segment, Leisurman approved, not approved, coming up, and a lot more coming up. World Cup questions you have for me later. But we always like to talk about what other shows we'll be talking about later this week. There's a video out there right now, Pearl, of LeBron James' son, Little Bron.
Bronny.
Little Bronny. And so he's in eighth grade. Does that sound right? Seventh, eighth grade?
He's 13, right? So I don't know what grade that is, but something
okay.
like that.
Okay. So 13 years old. I can't tell how tall he is yet. He's playing in some league he's in. And he dribbles the length of the court and almost dunks it. He just doesn't get up high enough to move the dunk. The whole place kind of goes crazy. It's full of kids. And LeBron's there, his hat on backwards. And LeBron jumps up like any other dad. But I mean, if he would have dunked it, I think LeBron may have run on the court. It's got to be weird to be LeBron's dad watching him play, because you want to react like any other dad, but you have to be aware that somewhere in that room, there's at least four or five cell phones on you, not on your son.
Oh, there's so much footage out there of LeBron watching Bronny. I see this one where LeBron and Chris Paul are there together watching Bronny, and it's basically watching both of them react to every play. You don't even see what the kid is doing. But it's so funny, that age at 13, like, there's a kid who makes a turnover. He's got to be, what, 4'10"?
Right.
So you forget how bad some of these kids they're playing are. I have no idea. I know LeBron wants to play with his son in the NBA. He's a little kid. How do you have any idea what kind of player he's going to ultimately be?
But look at the math. LeBron only needs 5.5 more years. I mean, that's, look at the math. If he's 13, he's in the league in 5.5 years from now, 6 years tops.
You think Bronny, from what you see there in that missed dunk highlight, is an NBA future star?
I got him top pick of the 2000-whatever-whatever draft. I'm not good with math. All right. Did you ever play growing up, or did you ever have someone in your neighborhood who was like a freakish athlete who ended up being a pro? Besides, and I know you had Kobe Bryant, but did you see Kobe Bryant play as a senior in high school at your high school?
Oh, yeah. I saw him. I saw him on TV as a senior. I think I saw him live as a junior.
Was it hysterical? Was it silly?
No. It was competitive. It wasn't he was really good, but he wasn't as physical as some of these guys. Like, he was doing a lot of jump shots, a lot of driving. It wasn't like he was 7 feet and just dunking on everyone.
Yeah, I went and saw a couple of really great pro players play when they were in high school. I saw Kevin Garnett play in person. And he was very thin, of course, but he could fly and he could jump and he had a really good post game. He was playing against really high-end Chicago talent, but there are times you'd see him on TV highlights in Chicago and he's playing against like pretty average high schools, and it looked funny. He would block shots with his armpit, and it was just really like wild. I don't remember seeing – we had some pretty good football players in the south side of Chicago, but I don't remember one that was just like a freak show where like he went on to be Adrian Peterson.
My favorite are the one that there's just such a height discrepancy. If you want to have fun, Google Manute Bol's kid, Bol Bol, who will be an incoming freshman next year, and he's supposed to be a top 10 pick in 2 years. He's got to have 9 inches on everybody on the court. So all he just does is run up and alley-oop dunks. It's so weird to see.
All right, it's time for the movie segment. Before we get rolling, now we look at movies in history and kind of give them the good, great, all-time great, bad, hokey, whatever you want to label this movie after all these years. Do you have anything you see this weekend or anything you want to recommend before I hit these three movies?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I saw a documentary on Fox about soccer called Nossa Chape, about a Brazilian soccer team that their plane crashed on the way to the finals. And it's very recent, so there's so much footage. You see them interviewing the pilot right before they take off, and then they get lost. They lose power, basically, have some distress calls, and then they try to rebuild the team. Paul, like you always said, you said it, and you were the first one I heard say this, you cannot make great fictional sports movies because the realities are so dramatic and so powerful. This was an unbelievable documentary. It was done by The Rock, ironically. Okay. I had no idea what his connection to soccer was. Really moved by this. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I think this 30 for 30 era that we're in the past 15, 17, 18 years has really dampened you wouldn't have Hoosiers now. Hoosiers wouldn't get made. They'd just make a 30 for 30 on Milan High School in 1950, whatever, 51, I think it was, in Indiana. But Hoosiers 35 years ago, 40 years ago, gets made. All right, here's three movies from history, and I want you to start it off, Pearl. This movie was released in June of 1988, Coming to America, Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, James Earl Jones as King Joffrey Jofer, and Eddie Murphy comes from his country where he's a prince. He's got an arranged marriage. He doesn't want to do it. He wants to meet his bride. He goes to Queens. There's a bunch of different scenes where Eddie Murphy plays different characters. Arsenio Hall plays different characters. If you haven't seen it, see it. I'm sure most of us who are listening right now have seen it. All time, where do you put Coming to America?
Ooh, I'm not a Coming to America guy. You're not going to believe this. I think it's really funny, but it's sort of worshipped. Other than the barbershop scenes, is it really a great movie, Paul?
You know, Eddie Murphy was pretty flawless at the time, and I think that may have something to do with it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of creativity with the different characters that they played, which I think took a simple movie and made it a lot better. It may not be the funniest movie of all time, but there's some. It's one that you put on and you generally watch. I'm going to say it's in the Hall of Very, Very Good.
Okay, I'll buy that. But how do you compare it to Trading Places, like Eddie Murphy's first?
I watched Trading Places this afternoon, by the way.
How did it hold on?
I watched it this afternoon.
Yeah, I see. To me, that's a Hall of Great, and Coming to America is a Hall of Very Good.
Trading Places is, it's better. Eddie was hitting more home runs back then.
Yeah, yeah, it's all time. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Coming to America is not that movie. Although we see the quote Coming to America more often, bizarrely. Okay, right. What else you got?
The Firm. It's Tom Cruise, 1993. He's a law student. It's based off the books. Who was the guy who wrote all those books?
John Grisham.
John Grisham. He was hot as a pistol back then. Everything he made got made into a movie. He goes to Memphis. He gets in with a shady law firm that represents the mob. The Firm. It was very big at the time. It made a truckload at the box office. It was, you know, not peak Tom Cruise, but it was right up there. Personally, when you see The Firm is going to be on, do you watch?
Never. Never. I don't think I've seen it since it came out. Do you watch it? Is it any good?
It's a little hokey. The writing's a little hokey. They put the right people in it. Getting Gene Hackman in was a nice move as one of the lawyers.
Yeah.
If it's on, if there's nothing on, and this is going to sound bad, but no, I really wouldn't stop to watch that movie.
No, it doesn't get a lot of play on cable either. The book is pretty amazing, by the way.
I know John Grisham's money because they're cheesy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, John Grisham, he's doing good. All right, what's next?
I'm really curious about your reaction, my reaction to this one. There's Something About Mary, 1998, the Farrelly brothers, when they were young and up and coming. You had Cameron Diaz. You had, what's his name? Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
You had the cameo by Brett Favre. You had Chris Elliott, who was on the Letterman show. It was Woogie. And I'll say this. At the time, that's a hysterical movie when the first time you watched it.
Whoa. At the time? There's Something About Mary. That's in the canon. There's not even a second of doubt that that is an all-time great comedy.
I knew you were going to defend this like you're defending a child.
Oh, my gosh. First of all, do you ever say anything ill about the Farrelly brothers, then we have to talk. They're geniuses, and that is the height of, as you said, earlier in their career, but at the height of their powers.
Okay,
That's an amazing movie.
This is the only criticism of Something About Mary. It's never as good as the first time you watch it, because the surprise things with, like, Warren and the thing, different things that happen in the movie, that the reactions, it's almost like shock comedy, I guess you'd call it. Remember when he's in the car with the guy and they're at the rest stop and all of a sudden, you know, what happens there in that scene?
Yeah.
When you know what's coming, it doesn't have the impact. It's still very funny and it's a very good movie and a classic comedy. But that is one of the movies, the first time you see it, I'll bet the theaters went crazy and you missed some lines of dialogue. You're laughing so hard.
Come back for the Matt Dillon performance and break down the Matt Dillon performance when he gets his teeth like whitened. Matt Dillon is so funny on a second watch of that movie. He is unbelievable. The very serious sort of like, you know, young heartthrob Matt Dillon is so amazing as a creep in that movie. But Cameron Diaz, delightful. And I'm just going to say it, Paul, delightful. I think that one is great.
If you had a Leisureman draft of characters from movies for wives, like who you want to have to be your wife, Cameron Diaz is easily a one seed if there's four one seeds.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, come on. I feel like just embrace Something About Mary, Paul.
I guess the only criticism, like I said, is that it's never as good as the first time, and that's really being critical.
Yeah, yeah. I love it. I've seen it as many, many times since. I always enjoy it.
Leisureman, NBC Sports Radio. Paul Pabst, Andrew Perloff. Big morning of a World Cup tomorrow morning. Starts at 10 a.m. Perloff. Saudi Arabia versus Egypt. Uruguay. Is it Uruguay or Uruguay, Perloff?
You're asking the wrong person. I thought it was Uruguay, but I don't know.
I'm going to go with Uruguay. I think I sound like I know what I'm talking about. Versus Russia, Iran versus Portugal, and then you got the hot one, Spain, Morocco. That probably won't be that great.
Yeah.
Perloff, before we get to Leisureman Proved, Not Approved in just a few minutes, I was looking at this website called The Muse, some type of hipster website, and they had 15 words you need to eliminate from your vocabulary. We're Leisureman. We're also somewhat educated men, you more than me. But we're always trying to improve ourselves. I'm going to read you some of these words, and you tell me, you're the English major, you're the Dartmouth guy, yes or no, should we get rid of these from our vocabulary? All right. Honestly. People use the word honestly to add emphasis. The problem is the minute you say, honestly, this is the best hamburger I've ever had, you've implied that the rest of your words were not honest. It's an awkward, unnecessary word.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're writing like a story for a magazine, you don't want to have honestly in there, but you're not adding anything. Of course you're being honest.
How about conversation?
No, you don't want to use it, but you have to understand, Paul, your whole take is like there's a school of thought that you're being folksy, you're being conversational. Like effective politicians use the word honestly. Like they'll say that So, like, I think the whole point is, like, I feel like language can change. You don't have to be a stickler for being precise. Why do you have to? Yes, it adds nothing. It's a terrible word like that. But
I know language evolves. But aren't there words that annoy you because they're overuse or misuse?
No.
All right, I'm going to give you one. You tell me if this word is overused or misused. Amazing. These Brussels sprouts are amazing. Do you like when you hear people say that at a restaurant?
It doesn't bother me. And I've No, it doesn't. I've been there at the table, and I've seen you turn red when people say that stuff. What's wrong? Why can't Brussels sprouts be amazing? I don't understand.
Because they're Brussels sprouts. You know what's amazing? When man lands on the moon. That's amazing. Where I'm actually amazed by what I just saw. Amazed means you're almost like about to pass out. You can't believe what you're seeing. That's the original term of the word. Now it's like... it's like a buttered bread. It's just so common. The word means causing great surprise or sudden wonder. Amazing has been watered down. It's very bothersome to me.
But you don't like Brussels sprouts. So I don't even know if you could comment on that. What if it was something that you were totally into, like something barbecued or seafood? Then could it be amazing?
Well, barbecue can be amazing and often is. All right, next word. Oh, boy. I guess we'll get to this. Irregardless. It doesn't mean when you think. It means regardless. When you say, how would you use irregardless in a sentence?
Is it irregardless like a transition, like where you're talking about one thing and you want to move a... Irregardless, let's talk about the garden. Like something like that, like irregardless is... I don't totally know what it means. Though.
Irregardless means regardless, and you could just use the word regardless. Let's say, so last night it rained like crazy, but regardless, I was inside, so it didn't really matter. That would be the proper way to use it. But somehow, irregardless has snuck into our language.
So what is it? So is it just a misuse?
It's a bastardized word that's unnecessary, Pearl.
Yeah, but if people talk like that, then that's what the... See, this is where we disagree. I'm much more about a language being a living thing that changes every 10 years. Like, when we were kids, remember teenagers used to say the word awesome, and parents were like, that's such a terrible word. Do you remember that at all?
Right.
Everything was awesome.
I guess I want a little bit of discipline.
I just don't agree with you. I sort of like getting in there and mixing it up. There's a reason people talk like that. So wait, the worst though is literally, because my daughter says it every sentence.
Right.
I literally have no idea where the art supplies are.
Literally means I literally was sitting on pins and needles, means there's a chair full of pins and needles and you were physically sitting on it. Like, I was literally on pins and needles waiting to find out the outcome. No, you weren't literally on it. You were figuratively on it. People use literally in place of figuratively or as an emphasizer, according to many different websites. And I did this whole thing on Twitter a couple weeks ago where this girl was saying, you know, I literally pulled my hair out. I was sitting there waiting for my grades to come in. And this girl was next to me, and she had all her hair. So she didn't literally pull it out. She was figuratively pulling her hair out.
Paul, have you ever stopped to consider that maybe you're too harsh on people misusing the English language?
Look, I was a bad student.
In you?
I was a C student. I was actually in honors English in Mr. Waddell's class in high school at Marian Catholic. He would be proud of me. I'm still trying to make him proud. He gave me a C. Then the final word is, and this one is sneaky, the word just. Like when you walk into a restaurant and say, what would you like, sir? I'd just like a little side of ranch with that. Just is a filler word that makes your sentence weaker, and it's a passive word, not a passive-aggressive word. It's a passive word. Unless, you know, it's being used both improperly and to fill your sentences. Take the word just out of your language.
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to defy it.
Hey,
this.
Andrew, do you want to go out and get ice cream after dinner? Nah, I just want to go home. Why don't you say, no, I want to go home. Because we are so passive and afraid to be declarative in how we speak these days.
Yes, because we want people to like us, unlike you, who just wants to be blunt and say everything in four words.
Blunt and disliked is not a bad club to be in.
I can't get down with you on this language police thing.
I'm surprised. Trust me, I
was at Sports Illustrated, and I know how to edit, like, and take out all the extra words, and I agree with that. Of course, it makes your writing more powerful. But I just don't see it. See what I did there?
You did that.
I literally can't figure out what you're talking about, regardless of where you're headed. Actually, nice job. You got these words in my head now. Now they're like just sort of popping out of my mouth.
Well,
honestly,
how about this?
I better stop saying that.
Let me ask your opinion. My daughter says things, and I language police her because I'm trying to have her not fall into these traps. Am I being a jerk parent? Like my daughter goes, Dad, I am so hungry. I'm like, first of all, so doesn't work on its own. I tell her in a nice way. I'm like, you have to say, I'm so hungry that I would like to make my own dinner and not wait for you guys to make it. That would be the proper way of using so, because and so wait, doesn't stand on its own.
The proper response for I heard would be, Dad, you are so stupid.
Right. But my daughter, my oldest daughter, Peyton, has kind of caught on. And now when I actually say something like, oh, I'm so tired, and she'll be like, so tired that, and she'll give it right back to me. And we're helping each other out. Or I'm just being a jerk dad.
It's okay. My daughter plays, she says, as if. And then, or she says, Daddy, say as if to me. And I'll say, as if. She goes, as if what, Daddy? You have to finish the sentence. So she set you up. Yeah, no, she's exactly like you. You and Lucy can sit around and language police people to death.
Sounds like a great kid. All right, Leishman approved, not approved. I'm going to go right to it because this could be the last broadcast we have before LeBron James makes some type of decision, some type of announcement. Leishman approved, not approved. LeBron James is in the home stretch of deciding where he's going to play next year, and his people are currently working every angle and every scenario of free agents to join him either before or after he joins that team, which I believe is the Lakers, but he has already decided the team, barring a disaster where the people can't get there and he goes back to the Cavs. But he's leaving. He has his people working on a project to get the people he wants there, and that's what's going on right now.
Disprove. Who's really? Which free agents? Who? Chris Paul and Paul George?
Yes. Paul George for sure.
Yeah, but Paul George isn't going to want... I can't see him necessarily wanting to do that. Why would he... All right, so Paul George knows LeBron's going to be there. Then you have a Paul George, LeBron team. Is that enough? Is that
interesting? It might not be enough, Pearl, but you're in L.A. You want to be in L.A.
Yeah.
You're already probably better than Cleveland just by the fact that you don't have to play with J.R. Smith anymore, who's probably untradeable.
I think... First of all, Cleveland, by the way, gelled a lot towards the end of last year. They almost took game one off the Warriors. I don't know that you're better. You're definitely not a better team than Cleveland. They have Kevin Love and George Hill and veterans. So here's the thing. Paul George might want to stay in OKC. It just seems like that's where things might be headed, because at least he's got Russell Westbrook and he's got Melo there, Steven Adams and all. That's kind of a better team than the Lakers. So that's the question. And Chris Paul, the other issue... I don't know if I want to build around Chris Paul as a partner to LeBron.
Okay, secondary Leishman approved, not approved. Paul George will join the Lakers if he can by any means possible, because he has played most of his career in somewhat obscurity. You don't know where he went to college. He was really great with the Pacers, then he got hurt, and now he's at OKC and they're doing nothing. He's going to have a great, irrelevant career if he doesn't make a move now.
Yeah, I mean, I understand where you're going from, but I don't know. It just feels like with the Sam Amick report this weekend that Oklahoma City is just as likely as L.A. I just don't know Paul George. He just doesn't seem like a guy that really wants that spotlight. He seems like a quiet guy. So I don't know. I honestly haven't. Do you have any sense of who Paul George is as a person?
No, but I guess everyone wants relevancy. That's just, I'm basing this thesis on that.
Now, here's a quote from Sam Amick on USA Today. There's all sorts of optimism in Oklahoma City that George will resign. Conversely, there's pessimism in the James camp that George would leave Oklahoma City. So that's the latest, just a report. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I don't know, Paul. I'm just not buying it. Okay, Leishman approved, not approved. There is a team out there that everyone is forgetting about that actually could end up being really good next year. Paul, tell me why the San Antonio Spurs do not return to form if they bring Kawhi Leonard back. They have LaMarcus Aldridge, Kawhi Leonard, Greg Popovich is a coach. They have a young up-and-coming star guard, DeJounte Murray. They won 61 games 2 years ago. That's a really good team. In fact, if I was LeBron, I would want to go there. They have you know how the Spurs are. Why do we always forget about the Spurs? How come they can't be sweet? Answer me that, Paul.
I agree with you. I'm fully approved that the Spurs way back, because to bet against the Spurs is pretty dumb historically in the past 20 years. I think it's also interesting that nobody is bringing up the Spurs as a team LeBron would join with Greg Popovich, because it's not juicy. It's not the team we want him to go to. We want him to go to L.A. or New York or somewhere juicy like that. So it's not based on basketball analysis. It's based on the fact that the Spurs historically have been kind of a quiet but great team.
I feel like I've read reports that LeBron's not interested in talking. Oh, yeah, Stephen A. said there were seven teams. And I'm not sure. He said that he'll talk to Popovich to be nice, but San Antonio is not a real option. So there has been people. You're right. People think San Antonio is not a city that he would go to if he's considering L.A. Because we love San Antonio, but it's not L.A.
Leisureman approved, not approved. When people on the street, casual or semi-serious NFL fans, discuss the top five quarterbacks in NFL history, rarely will Drew Brees' name get mentioned. Approved, not approved.
Approve.
Fair?
Probably. I mean, it's hard to tell because the numbers are so ridiculous these days. You know, you look at the top 10 out of the top 15 NFL quarterback seasons of all time have happened in the last 5 years. Matthew Stafford probably has three of them. So these numbers are so ridiculous, people are going to credit that instead of Drew Brees himself.
He's 7-6 in career in the postseason. He has one Super Bowl, which was gigantic. It was a real big one for that town. He has 70,000 yards. He's a 67% career passer. He's going to be at 500 touchdowns by about November. But I still think it comes down to he never looked the part, so he always gets cast as like, what actor would you compare him to? Where he did everything, he won everything, but people still look at him as not a star.
Like a role player, like Paul Giamatti kind of guy?
Nah, I think bigger than Giamatti. I don't know. I don't even know who I'm comparing it to, but I always think Drew Brees doesn't get the full appreciation.
Well, he's a second, you know, I think he was top of the second round, right? That's definitely a part of it.
Yes,
too.
That hurts.
Yeah, but still, though, you can't, what do you do with today's numbers, Paul? Like, you really, like, you know.
But somebody has to have the best of these great numbers.
And yeah, but they're all in the next last 10 years. Favre had it, then Manning had it, then Brees had it, then Stafford and all the his generation of guys will pass it. So they lose all meaning because they changed the rules to make it so easy to pass for 5,000 yards. Look how many 5,000-yard seasons we've had in the last 10 years.
Do you have a personal favorite quarterback ability? Not stats, not rankings. Just where you think, that guy's the best football player at the quarterback position I've ever seen. Do you have that person, or is it a few people?
Well, yeah, I think Aaron Rodgers is the most talented I can remember. But I don't know, because I might be having some recency bias there. Elway, Aaron Rodgers, Marino, Favre in the late 90s when the rules weren't. I don't know. No, it does. I guess I don't have an answer, although Aaron Rodgers is pretty close to my answer.
I think I would go Aaron Rodgers and Joe Montana at his peak. Those guys made the position look easy. They looked like they were having a good time out there.
See, Joe Montana, I didn't see it. Honestly, I know he's great, but he didn't have the highlight throws like Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers will whip it 60 yards downfield.
Oh, sure. He never had that kind of strength, but I think Joe had the kind of aim where he could put it on a guy running in full stride. I think it's, and this is really deep, deep football stuff. He put Jerry Rice in position to catch the ball running across the middle to pick up yards in stride so many times where he didn't have to stop and catch and turn to get yards after the catch. I'll bet Jerry Rice, if you do yards after the catch, he's going to be obviously the lead linger all time. But the way Montana put the ball on his receivers, they didn't have to work that hard for it.
Right, but that's why the highlights aren't great. They're 8-yard passes.
Sure.
That's what I mean. It's not like where Aaron Rodgers goes against his body and whips it 40 yards. Yeah.
Joe made the game look easy and effortless. And I think it's like Joe Montana on steroids, figuratively, not literally, is Aaron Rodgers.
The thing is, though, and I know I'm going to go system, but Young came in right after Montana and did it even better in the Walsh system.
Well, because
Young was at the top of the heap. He was unbelievable.
I think Steve Young is one of the more underrated football players in the history of the NFL.
It's Bill Walsh. It's not Steve Young and Joe Montana.
Right.
It's Bill Walsh.
Yes, but what they did with his system, they maxed it out to make it just perfect where they're smoking people. And Steve Young was an unbelievable running quarterback. Really, I think because of the first 8 years, his career was basically irrelevant, either in the USFL or waiting on a bench. He didn't have the broad scope of famousness.
Right, but he had to get to that system. Like, just like Tom Brady had to get to Belichick. You know, the guy's quarterback is all about getting to the right place. I'm sorry. I know people kill me for that take. But that Niners team, it was so perfectly constructed around Montana to fit his needs. Anyway, I don't know how we got distracted here. At least you've been approved, not approved. Bryce Harper, our guy, Washington Nationals, has said he will compete in the Home Run Derby if and only if he is named to the All-Star team, which he probably will be. He'll be voted in. If you're Bryce Harper, do you do the Home Run Derby this year in Washington, your hometown?
Absolutely. There's no loss to doing it. You get the win by participating in it. You could go 0 for 100, and it'll be a real embarrassing night, but it's about putting on a show for the fans. You'll gain nationwide pat on the back for being there for his team, for his fans, in the hometown thing. This is a no-lose situation, even if he does nothing in the Home Run Derby.
Now he's had, well, he'll dominate the home run derby. He's great at home run derbies, but he's had a lot of trouble hitting this year. Are you a guy who worries about the messing up your swing in the home run derby?
I think that's one of those things that probably one guy said one time, and now people have just taken it as a possibility. All right, Leisure approved, not approved. Bryce Harper hat backwards home run derby.
Oh, that's not even a question.
1,000%?
Definitely have. Oh, of course. Of course. That doesn't even count. Give me another one, Paul.
All right. The best thing, Leisure approved, not approved. The best thing I've seen on TV, internet, anywhere this year is late night host James Corden doing carpool carry with Paul McCartney of the Beatles. He went to his old hometown of Liverpool, surprised some people on the street, went to a pub, and he played like a free concert for people who were hanging out at this local pub. Man, I've watched it four times in the past 4 days, and it's just perfect, a perfectly produced, whoever produced that thing, whoever put it together, they should win all kinds of awards.
Paul, I can't watch it. And because everyone on Twitter told me how amazing it was. I guess there's like a 23-minute clip where James Corden's crying in the car or something.
Yes.
I can't do it because everyone says it's so amazing. Am I making a mistake here? Because I'll watch it tonight if you tell me I should.
No, it first of all, you must be a big Beatles fan or else this conversation doesn't work. And a big fan of Paul McCartney or this conversation doesn't work. But if you didn't know it was coming, because I didn't know it was coming, all I see is carpool karaoke, James Corden and Paul McCartney. I think it's going to be the traditional get in the car, sing three songs, and move on with your life. They did like a half hour all day bit where they went to his hometown. They went to his grade school. They went to like the apartment he lived in as a child. They went to a local pub and surprised some people. They like blew out the budget for this one. And it was worthy of Paul McCartney. And McCartney, he's a saint. I don't know how he deals with. Think what it's like to be Paul McCartney. A dozen times a day, people meet you and it's the greatest, one of the great moments of their life. And it's just another second of your life. But if I walked up to Paul McCartney, I don't think I'd have anything to say. I couldn't get it out of my mouth. And it would be the coolest thing ever. My sister met Paul McCartney on vacation. She said he was just crazy nice. Like where Paul McCartney said to my sister's husband, my brother-in-law, "So what do you do?" And he told me that he goes, "Oh," and Paul McCartney goes, "You're not going to ask what I do?" And it was so funny the way he said it. It wasn't cocky at all, but because everyone knows who Paul McCartney is.
Yeah, no, that does sound good. Yes, I don't know. I'm such a cynic. I just, when everybody, you're the same way, so don't say you're any better, but when everybody's in love with something, I tend to go the other way. Completely different. I'll give you one more Leisure approved, not approved. We've had about 3 days at the Jameis Winston, possibly being suspended for 3 games. Paul, I've kind of talked myself into possibly giving up on him now. Is that crazy? Approved, not approved, at least you look at it.
You know, I think the Bucs have to let this season play out because of the level of talent on their team.
Yeah.
And if the team is 10-6 and gets a playoff victory and everyone plays well and he stays out of trouble, everything is cool for a while. Everything cools down. If you cut him and have to search another 10 years for a star quarterback, I think that's a mistake at this juncture.
True, but it's been a bad week.
It's
for
close.
Him.
I read
a lot of columns this weekend. People are not high on Jameis Winston.
No, it's just there's too many incidents for him to get the hall pass anymore. Mm-hmm. It's now if he's accused of something, you assume it's true, and you don't even really give him the benefit of the doubt. And I'm really big on giving people fair, wide berth until I hear all the facts. He's kind of at this juncture lost that, and it's not going to get any better. Like the next time he has a small incident, it's be a big incident.
Yeah, and if you're a Bucs fan, it's hard to get excited about the team with him at quarterback because even if they win, you might not like him. So it's going to be tough. All right, I hope you enjoyed the Sunday night podcast. Paul, I think we had a little bit of arguments here on some things, you know, the use of the English language, maybe something about Mary, but we're still friends. It's okay to argue. We didn't get past this.
I'm proud of you. I took a shot at one of the movies that you loved, and you didn't return fire with like a snide Walter Payton comment or something like that would really get under my skin and stay there for years on end.
Oh, yeah. Hey, did you know, by the way, I was looking at my football statistics. Do you know the 85 Bears won a Super Bowl, Paul? Because nobody from Chicago ever talks about that.
I'm fine with that. Just don't mess with Walter. Don't mess with sweetness, and you and I will have a perfect relationship. Thanks for listening to Leisure and Podcast. Download, subscribe, art19.com and Apple Podcasts. And don't forget the Sunday night radio show every Sunday night, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern on NBC Sports Radio. We're the Leisureman. We're done.